Good morning.
Welcome to the Board of Public Works. Got a full house here today. Last week, in one of the most outrageous and irresponsible actions that has ever been taken by the Maryland General Assembly, a last-minute secret bill was rammed through with no hearings, no public input, no notice, in smoke-filled back rooms. The people who perpetrated this scam admitted that it wasn't about policy. They clearly stated that it was about politics and childish personal vendettas. But it is actually very serious business, which will have a devastating impact on education and on Maryland taxpayers. This legislation, if you can even call it that, would strip authority and oversight from this Board of Public Works and the three fiscal leaders of the state. It would remove any real oversight or accountability in Maryland's school construction funding process. This bill attempts to change a fiscally responsible legal process which has been working effectively in our state for 50 years. The bill would remove the Board of Public Works from the process and instead place billions of dollars of state taxpayer money into the hands of an unelected, unaccountable group of political appointees and hand-picked lobbyists who have serious conflicts of interest. The bill, as originally drafted, would have modernized and streamlined school construction. It was an important proposal and one that we would have been proud to support. However, with less than 2 weeks left in the legislative session, on the very same day that one of their own members pled guilty to bribery and corruption, at a time when Marylanders are crying out for more accountability, more oversight, and more transparency in education spending, this legislature ignored those pleas and instead attempted to do away with all oversight, accountability, and transparency. This bill, if allowed to become law, would be an unmitigated disaster for our state, which would create a disgusting cesspool of cronyism and corruption in the school funding process. That is why this morning I am vetoing this bill. I'm going to do it right here. Now, I can only assume, and I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, I can only assume that some legislators maybe had no idea what they were voting for when their party leaders forced them to cast this horrible vote. But let me be very, very clear. Anyone who votes to override this veto will be voting against transparency, against accountability in education, against fiscal responsibility, and against the wishes of an overwhelming majority of Marylanders. Thank you. Mr. Comptroller?
Thank you, Governor.
Yeah.
Well, Governor, very briefly, I would like to echo your comments, applaud you for vetoing House Bill 1783, or as I call it, the backroom bill. The fact that this piece of legislation, which would fundamentally change the structure of Maryland state government, was rushed through the legislative process without any public hearings, or input in the Senate is demonstrative of the deficit of transparency and accountability in this town. It is truly sad. According to several news accounts, these draconian actions were inspired by this board's leadership and insistence that 50,000 kids in the Baltimore region have classrooms that are cool in the warmer months and warm in the cooler months. Apparently, these actions downstairs were inspired by this board's advocacy for a new high school in Baltimore County to replace one that is literally falling apart. And apparently, the legislative actions were inspired by this board's audacious, tough questioning of Howard County school officials concerning the presence of mold in classrooms after the superintendent in Howard County at that time had demonstrated hostility and indifference to parents and students. Can someone please tell me why, in the year 2018, people in my own party believe it is politically objectionable for kids to be able to go to school without getting sick?
Well, that's ridiculous.
Can someone please tell me why, in the year 2018, the Senate President and the House Speaker have a problem with ensuring that schools in Baltimore County and Baltimore City are climate controlled, like their ornate offices downstairs? Can someone tell me why individuals from my party, the Democratic Party, would have this board ignore the concerns and pleas for action from children, parents, and families in order to protect superintendents who have long since resigned in disgrace? While I'm surprised that Senator Klossmeyer cast an adverse vote, I'm hopeful and cautiously optimistic that she will represent the best interests of the 8th Legislative District, which has directly benefited from this board's leadership on the air conditioning issue. Since this board began highlighting the inhumane, sweltering conditions that existed in Baltimore County public schools back in 2011, 10 schools in Senator Klossmeyer's district have been air conditioned. Thanks to this board's action, 6,923 students in Senator Klossmeyer's district now attend air-conditioned schools. Thanks to this board's action, 445 teachers who work in schools in the senator's district are no longer forced to teach in these awful conditions. I'm sure these students and teachers would vote differently than the senator did recently if they had the chance. I'm also hopeful that Senator Mathias will do the right thing and oppose this transparency-thwarting bill that prevents this board from taking action that directly supports school systems across the state, especially those in historically underfunded areas like Wicomico and Somerset counties. I've visited a large number of schools in Senator Mathias's district to better educate myself as a member of this board on the capital needs and conditions of these schools. This board, working directly with local school systems, has advanced key priorities such as constructing the new Bennett Middle School in Salisbury, as well as three replacement schools that are well underway, J.M. Taw's Career and Technology Center in Crisfield and West Salisbury Elementary are under construction, with the Shaw Elementary project set to break ground later this year. I doubt Senator Mathias's constituents would agree with his vote to strip this board of the oversight, accountability, and transparency it provides. Governor, in the end, this is about the new politics of transparency and accountability and the old politics of backroom deals in the Senate lounge. According to the Senate President, it's where the Budget and Taxation Committee held its hearing and voting session on this issue we're talking about without any public notice or any public input. This is about an open process where teachers, parents, and students have a say and are heard before this board, a closed process where the Senate President and the Speaker enjoy complete and absolute control. This is about a process where all Maryland students are treated equally, regardless of their income level, versus a process that rewards school systems with connections to powerful Annapolis insiders and the politically connected. This is about preserving a process where every child gets an equal opportunity, where parents and teachers, taxpayers have a platform for their voices to be heard. I hope Senator Klausmeier and Senator Mathias and the other members of the Democratic caucus, all it requires is one of them, one of the 29, to do the right thing and vote to sustain his veto. Governor, with your permission, maybe I could just sign that as a witness.
That would be great.
And,
first of all, hey, wait. Let me, this will be, let me give you another stamp here. Oops, you can veto that one too.
Yeah. So,
not sure if it counts, but we'll do it.
I'm signing this as Peter Francho. I had to draw my own signature line, and I'm going to put underneath it, for the people. Thank you, Governor.
Madam Treasurer?
Yeah. Amazing, and I understand the applause. I applause at theater, too. This is the most amazing rerun of Kabuki theater that I have seen in some time. We went through this last week, and I don't know really that we have to go through it again. I guess we do, but I'm surprised.
Well, we only had until tomorrow to veto the bill. So.
Well, right. No, I understand why you had to veto it today if you were going to veto it. I don't quite understand the rerun of all the histrionics in the theater. Obviously, where you stand depends on where you sit. There were 4 days of debate in the legislature, the policy-making body. Once again, I reiterate that I believe we have a system that has gained national reputation over the decades for a nonpartisan, nonpolitical, combined state-local system of building schools where they're needed. It worked until about 3 years ago. Although there were problems before that, don't get me wrong, but when this board started being used as a political device and platform for theater. Obviously, the schools in Baltimore County are funded mostly by Baltimore County. The plans and priorities always have been, and I believe ought to be, the result of the hearings and the consideration of the elected school board, the county council, and the county executive, working with the school communities, going up to the IAC, which has professionals in both technology, Mr. Secretary, and in planning and in education, getting a list of priorities for the state. Never before have we had a system in which the politicians on the Board of Public Works intervened and decided to put their priorities above those that came through the normal professional process. I think it's very, very unfortunate. And then all this labeling and name-calling and targeting. You obviously, a comptroller targeted two senators. I think they're strong and can speak for their constituents and speak up for themselves. I don't think ornate offices. I don't know if you've been in the speaker's office, but I've been in both his office.
I've been in the silver room where one of them got together. One group office. Got together. That
yes.
was definitely ornate, but
it is. But it's not his office, is it? It's part of the old historic state capitol. But I think the real issue is whether we want to stick with a process that is non-political as it can be, with accountability governor, and I'm sure the folks in this room will be comfortable and satisfied to know that actually the governor will have as strong or stronger input into this new system if it goes into effect than in the present system. Because he will be appointing more than half of the members of the new IAC, which will, as we all know, operate with transparency, with accountability and public hearings. And that that issue, I think, is one that if you just look at the bills and look at the budget, you know that's so. It is true that it reduces the role of the comptroller and the treasurer, but I'm not sure in setting school priorities and educational policy that it should be a political role. It never had been before. I think that this system that we have now could work well, but it hasn't. It has been starting to slip towards a different type, not financial, but political corruption. But a new system of a new board that is appointed by the elected officials and accountable and transparent and has professional, as opposed to just political input, could work out to be a very good thing. So we just we disagree on this, and I really do regret that it's been turned into this sort of theater. And I appreciate the work that the school system in Baltimore County and the school system in Baltimore City and around the state have done to the teachers, the boards of education, the county governments, to support their schools and to enhance education. And I think we should keep the system that we had. Yes, there have been problems, obviously, but they can be overcome, just as the problems that we've had at the state level can be overcome. So I just wish we cut the theater and get back to work.
Well, thank you, Madam Treasurer.
Thank you.
I agree we shouldn't change the system that's worked for 50 years. And quite frankly, I'm very proud of the work that we have done, the three of us, over the past 3 years, working together in a bipartisan way.
I think we worked well, but cutting $15 million
nearly every vote
punishment is
unanimous on this board, and you've sat here with us as we've held people accountable. The Baltimore County school system you just praised as the guy that was running the system that we asked some tough questions of is now going to jail. He's been convicted of bribery
but
and corruption.
But surely we're not libeling the entire system.
No, but us holding them accountable when they're breaking the law or wasting taxpayers' money is our obligation as the state's leading fiscal leaders. And, you know, I appreciate your opinion. And I'm quite frankly, you know, I feel bad that they made you say things like that.
No
I know
one.
You don't believe me.
No one makes me say
that. That's a good point. Definitely a good point.
That was embarrassing almost. But we're going to go ahead and get started with the Secretary's agenda.
Good morning, Governor. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, we have 7 items on the Secretary's agenda. We are withdrawing item 3. We also have 4 reports of emergency procurements.
Any questions on the Secretary's agenda?
Number two.
Okay, item number 2, we have Mr. Andy May here from the Maryland Department of the Environment. I could also answer questions. These are the routine wetlands licenses, and Mr. Morganti, your wetlands administrator, is out ill today, but Mr. May is here, and also I can help from the office.
Next time you come back for it.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
You're off the hook.
Oh, okay. Yes, no, next time. Exactly. We were drawing.
Yeah,
I got you.
Yeah. Sorry.
Any other questions on Secretary's agenda?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0, Secretary's agenda. We'll move on to DNR, real property.
Good morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. Happy Maryland Arbor Day.
Happy Arbor Day. Thank you.
For the record, I am Secretary of Maryland Department of Natural Resources. My name is Mark Belton, and we have 6 items on the real property agenda for your consideration this morning.
I know that we have Commissioner James Heinbaugh from Garrett County here.
Yes, sir.
Talk about, I think he's coming to talk about item 2.
Yes, sir. Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. This has to do with procurement of 126 acres of property that in the area we describe as Fork Run. Fork Run is a Class 3 trout stream. This property includes the headwaters of Fork Run. It's contiguous to 550 acres that we already own, where we've developed a pretty extensive hike and bike trail system, a rock climbing venue, and some orienteering courses. It's probably the most popular, the most used recreational area we have in the county right now for trails. I use it personally myself. Every time I go there, there are quite a few people there. So this property is contiguous to the 550. It will allow us to expand the Fork Run recreation area and develop more trails, other venues for outdoor recreation. It'll preserve an area that's environmentally sensitive in that it's the headwaters of Fork Run. This is also pretty close to Deep Creek Lake, where there's a lot of development. So this procurement will help us preserve a nice green space there where people from the lake and also locals, a lot of locals use these trails also. They do cross-country skiing there. They do all kinds of things there. So it's critically important to us, and we would appreciate, respectfully request, and appreciate your support for this acquisition.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. Thank you for coming all the way down from Garrett County. I know that Senator George Edwards has also weighed in very strongly in favor of this as well. So
yes, sir.
Thank you so much for your attention. Any questions?
It was an education for me. I enjoyed the it was quite an experience.
Yeah.
It's nice to be here.
We're going to start selling tickets.
Thank you,
it's almost worth the drive from Garrett County. Any other questions on the DNR agenda? Second. 3-0 on DNR. We're going to move on to the BBM agenda.
Good morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, David Brinkley, the Secretary of the Department of Budget and Management. We've brought 8 items for your consideration, and I have people here to address any concerns or questions.
I believe we have people signed up for item 2. We have Nancy Pinellas. And then we have Ms. Margolis, but I think first maybe we'll hear from Deputy Secretary Greg James to explain the item, and then we can have the other folks come and talk. Good morning.
Good morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. The item before you today, my name is Greg James. I'm Deputy Secretary for Operations of the Maryland Department of Human Services. The item before you today is our request for approval to exercise our first and only option, 1-year option on a residential services contract for youth that we have placed at Wood Services in Pennsylvania. We currently have 5 youth at Woods. You may recall when we brought this contract to you last year, we had 11 youth, I believe, placed at Woods. So we've been working on bringing those children back to Maryland. At this time, we anticipate that 3 of those remaining 5 will be returning to Maryland by July of this year. And the remaining 2, we've worked very closely with the local departments of social services, their caseworkers. In one case, the family is involved. And based upon the particular circumstances of those youth and their medical conditions, at this time, we don't have an appropriate placement in Maryland that can support those youth. We continue to work on that and see if there isn't a way to have one of our providers serve those youth, but at this time we don't have an immediate plan for their return.
Great. Could I get a clarification? Is Ms. Pinellas here? Ms. Pinellas, who asked to speak on this item?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, you are here. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Deputy Secretary James. Maybe we'll have Ms. Pinellas come up and talk, and then you can address any issues that she has. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you very much for this opportunity to speak to you. I'm Nancy Pinellas. I'm the managing attorney for developmental disabilities at Disability Rights in Maryland. We're the protection and advocacy system for people with disabilities in Maryland, and we've been working on this issue of children in out-of-home placements and children with developmental disabilities in group homes for a while now. We really appreciate that your actions and attention to this matter have helped return children to the state of Maryland so they can live closer to their families. This has made a huge difference to children and their families who now can spend more time together. The Department of Human Resources responded to your requests and developed a lot more placements and opportunities for children to live in Maryland. But I'm testifying to provide a little context and some other alternative approaches. Significantly, most of the children who were out of state and who now live in these very expensive group homes that you're considering have developmental disabilities. And many are in foster care through voluntary placements because their behaviors became unsafe at home. Maryland has no system of crisis prevention and intervention to help children and families when the children's behaviors, because of their developmental disabilities such as autism, become unmanageable at home. Last fall, we held a conference to present the START program, which is a program for crisis intervention and prevention. And this program is successful in at least 11 other states and generated a great deal of interest among advocates and family members and professionals, but we haven't persuaded the state to adopt this yet. We think this is a really, really important way to deal with the problem of children with developmental disabilities and avoid placement in residential settings. Even with the expanded autism waiver and Developmental Disabilities Administration waiver slots, these children still lack access to services. And with no crisis prevention and intervention system, a typical scenario is that a child experiences multiple 911 calls or hospital visits until the parent just refuses to take the child home because they're afraid that the child, somebody's going to get hurt at home. Per a memorandum of understanding between the Developmental Disabilities Administration and the Department of Human Services, the foster care system, not the state health department, intervenes at this point of family crisis and emergency. Even when there are no allegations of abuse or neglect by the family, a child with developmental disabilities is forced to enter the foster care system to get services for their disability. But that shouldn't happen, but that is what's happening in Maryland. So instead of waiting until a family refuses to take their child home, we need to re-examine how to prevent these repeat hospitalizations, keep families together whenever possible, and deliver thoughtful services when that is not possible. This should be a win-win for families, children, and the state of Maryland, partly because using the foster care system as a disability service system is much more expensive than delivering services through the health care system. The Developmental Disabilities Administration can support a child in the family home, whereas the foster care system cannot. And note, in the contract, the 20% federal reimbursement rate for these child residential services, the state receives a 50% federal match by serving children through the Developmental Disabilities Administration. So Maryland is leaving money on the table by using the foster care system to deliver services instead of through the health department. There are a lot of other effects of using the foster care system, such as families risk losing all or some of their decision-making authority. They have to pay child support and attend court hearings. None of this happens when a child just gets services through the health department. So we're investigating the quality of care. I just wanted to mention we're concerned about quality and oversight at these group homes as well. That may not be the subject for today, but we do really appreciate that our clients have such improved opportunities in Maryland by keeping them here in this state. But with more effort and more forethought, the state can secure truly excellent services for children with developmental disabilities by adopting a crisis prevention and intervention system and using the health department to deliver services to children instead of forcing them into foster care. So we're looking forward to working with the state agencies and maybe securing improved services. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for your passionate advocacy, and thank you for your input for the hearing today.
This is fascinating because I was around long enough ago to remember when we started preventive intervention in foster care. That was a great thing. Is this because it's more than one department? You're talking about DDA, and here we have and I know the governor has worked hard to bring the cabinet together so you have all of the agencies sitting together. But is this problem at all related to the fact that you're dealing with different departments, different stovepipes?
I, I think very much it's a problem, and there's been a tradition that's evolved over the years that DDA typically does not serve children, and they have expanded their opportunities for children, but at a very low level. So the tradition, and per agreement by the agencies, is that when there's a crisis for a child under age 18, that it is the responsibility of the Department of Human Services, not DDA. And, you know, we've been struggling with this. We've been trying to get DDA to accept children who meet all the criteria for our services and are in crisis. So, you know, like an adult, they meet the priority, they meet all the legal requirements, but DDA balks at this. And we don't understand that fully, except that we know that funding is allocated to the Department of Human Services for tradition.
I think all the my impression, having met with every, is that all the parties are well intentioned. I mean, everyone wants to do the right thing, but sometimes these either tradition or line from Washington or just departmental lines that we try to overcome with this cabinet bringing everybody together need a little more push.
Yeah, well, we'll push.
I really appreciate it. This
sounds like she's
interesting.
Pushing.
No.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. Mr. James, would you like to address anything? I think we have somebody else.
I think the only thing I'd like to highlight for the board is that certainly, yes, there may have been a tradition of state agencies not working and collaborating closely together. I believe that has changed.
That was our impression also.
We now have, at the local level, local care teams, which are coordinating exactly to try and identify cases where we can prevent that child from entering care. The last thing we want is any child entering the foster care system. If we can safely keep them in their home, that's what we want to do and that's what we want to support. I don't want to overstep and speak for another state agency, but I can say that Developmental Disabilities Administration has created a new child services director position and has introduced a new waiver program to allow them to expand these services for these youth exactly for the purpose that Ms. Finellis has identified. And I also want to acknowledge the work that Disability Rights Maryland does. They're an important voice and an important partner in this conversation, and we look forward to continuing to work with them.
Thank you very much. I believe we have a Ms. Margolis who wants to testify. Okay. Thank you. Mr. James, thank you for the effort and all the great work to get us down to only these five out-of-state placements and working hard to get them. I know the comptroller was very passionate about this, and I know it's difficult because these are some of the hardest the cases and the people that really need the help that we couldn't provide. But we want to thank you for all the efforts, and we're anxious to get it finalized and bring everybody back.
Well, we appreciate your support, and frankly, the pressure that you put on us forced us to tackle a very difficult problem, so thank you.
It's nothing like a transparent, accountable forum can allow the citizens to come up and make their concerns. But thank you, Mr. Secretary. I don't think all of the, I was concerned particularly about Woods, and they're down to, I think, now five, and you've got your sights set on bringing more of them back. There are probably another 10 or 15 out-of-state folks, I believe.
So I believe we're at 22 total out-of-state right now. Two of those are placed through juvenile services, so those aren't really within our control. Those are the courts. Of that 20 right now, we anticipate 9 are on track to return back to Maryland. So our goal is to get that number below 10.
Well, that's a big difference from where it was when we first started on this issue. And Ms. Pinellas, am I pronouncing right? It has brought up, obviously, a bigger issue that the treasurer asked about, and that probably is downstairs where that should be handled. ultimately, if the state's leaving money on the table, obviously everybody would think that was a good idea to tweak our system so that the health people can get more fully reimbursed. But thank you for bringing that bigger issue to us, and I guess keep us in the loop on how that proceeds, and let us know if the legislature is responsive on that policy issue.
I would just like to say that we had this previous discussion about trying to hold local school superintendents accountable and bringing them before us to ask tough questions. Probably we were even rougher on our own cabinet secretaries, and I don't think anybody got beat up more than Deputy Secretary James. He did an incredible job in response to that, so thank you very much.
It's an honor I don't wish to claim.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much. Are there any other questions on
this? Can I just add one thing? Greg, wherever he went.
I think he...
I just wanted to thank you. I know we loaded a lot of questions and went after you all for a better understanding of this issue, and you and your people have been really extremely helpful.
Well, it's our responsibility to make sure that you all are informed and can make informed decisions, and so welcome any questions that you have and are always happy to meet and provide whatever information.
Thank you very much. Yeah. James, great job. Any other questions on the DVM?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0 on DVM. We move on to university system agenda.
Nope, they're not here. No items today.
No items. That was easy. They're off the hook. Information technology is not off the hook.
Well, good. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Michael Leahy, Acting Secretary of the Department of Information Technology. Today we have 5 items on your agenda, and I do have agency representatives available to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. I'd like to maybe talk about item 4, please.
Governor, that's the MBA. That's nice.
Very good.
Good morning.
I was hoping maybe you could explain the MBA Customer Connect modernization and customer service enhancements that we'll provide.
Well, thank you, Governor. You certainly made the commitment to all Maryland residents. Administrator of the Maryland Department of Transportation Motor Vehicle Administration, for the record. Thank you. You certainly have put the commitment to all Maryland residents that our state agencies will ensure that the highest quality of customer service is provided. The Department of Transportation, under Secretary Ron's leadership, we take that issue very seriously and have implemented many customer and service enhancements over the last 4 years. We've brought down wait times more than 10 minutes, a very significant reduction, offered more online services, making the experience better at the branch offices. We get great feedback from our customers. The contract you have in front of you today is really another tool to help us move forward even quicker and more efficiently. It allows us to do more services online, allow transactions to be more efficient. Right now, if you're familiar with the branch, you have to go literally to one counter for a vehicle transaction, another for a driver's transaction. This will be one account for the customer, all transactions done at one station. The agent will have more information at their disposal to be able to provide all they can to that customer. And so we're really excited about this step forward from a customer service standpoint.
That's wonderful. Well, Chrissy, I appreciate your efforts as well. With all due respect to your agency, the MBA was not always considered the most customer-friendly place to deal with. I think that's probably putting it mildly, right? But the work that you and your team are doing is really really impressive. I mean, customer service is something both the comptroller and I have been talking about for 3 years at this board and elsewhere, and it's been a real focus of ours. And I think during our regulatory reform effort as we traveled around the state, we had all these hearings, and the number one thing they talked about was customer service. And, state agencies not being that responsive, and unfortunately MBA was one that they didn't feel was that responsive. But I think you've really focused on this customer service-based mission, and I'm hearing it from people who say, wow, I went to get my license renewed or I went to get my tags, and it was, like, unbelievable, which is in a positive way instead of a negative way. And reducing wait time by 36% over the last 3 years is quite an achievement. And I just want to congratulate you and your team and Secretary Ron. And this is a great thing that I think we'll be happy to approve. And I look forward to continued enhancements.
Thank
so
you,
we can
Governor.
Like instantly get everything done.
We are we've established what we call premier customer service at the MBA, and every employee has bought into that idea. And in fact, many of the enhancements that you're enjoying are our employees' ideas. And so we know that they understand best how the system works and what the holdups can be in the process. And so we're out at branches all the time. I was just at Annapolis and Salisbury talking to the staff out there. We've got a legislative proposal that's going to be an enhancement from a customer agent on the front line who just said, why are we doing the process this way? So we're always looking for great ideas, either from customers or from employees, to make it better.
Well, I've heard, actually, personally, from both customers and employees. And the employees are happier, too,
yeah.
Right? Because people aren't yelling at them all day, and they're not waiting in line forever. And people are saying, wow, thank you. And they're enjoying the new process.
They right? have a lot of pride in the enhancements.
And they help fix it.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. We've brought them into the process.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions on information technology? Promotion?
Move
3-0. We're going to move on to Secretary Ron, the Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, my name is Pete Ron. I am the Secretary of the Maryland Department of Transportation. Today we have 3 items for your consideration, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions on transportation? A motion?
Move approval.
3-0. And now we're going to move on to Secretary Churchill, Department of General Services.
Well, good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Ellington Churchill, Secretary for the Department of General Services. Our department has 14 items on our agenda today, and we're happy to answer any questions you may have at this time.
Questions of Secretary Churchill, DGS.
It's not a question, but I thank you also, just like Greg James, your folks have been very helpful in following up this question of preventive maintenance and getting the agencies, let's say, corrections, working with you on a system of preventive maintenance. As you know, this is something that I think is very important both financially and in terms of keeping our capital stock in good shape. And I hope we will have the opportunity to be updated as you progress with the system that I know you're trying to get people to implement. And if there's anything we can do to help, we want to.
All right, thank you for those words of encouragement. And as you, we are at the beginning of this process in terms of marshaling our forces and to focus on maintenance and operations. So thank you.
The beginning of the beginning.
The beginning of the beginning.
We got started.
I can't wait till we get to the end of the end. any other questions? 3-0 on general services. I just want to take a moment. Today marks the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. And at a time of turmoil and strife, Dr. King's dream inspired a nation to live up to the ideal of its founding, that all of us are created equal. While much progress has been made, there's still much more left to be done. And my hope, and I believe Dr. King's dream, was for all of us to focus not on what makes us different or divides us, but on all that unites us. Although we mark today when an assassin's bullet took his life, we also dedicate ourselves to fulfilling Dr. King's dream. So before we conclude, I'd just like to take all of us to take a moment of silence in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. That concludes the Board of Public Works.
This is
for our